Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. We are just over a week away from basketball, and we are here to talk about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast, and on the other line, as always, is Matt Velasquez. He is the Bucks beat reporter covering that team for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Matt, it's kind of good news so far with the NBA, hoping to return here by July 31st. Some scrimmages are on tap for later this week. The Bucks and the Spurs will be tipping at 2 o'clock on Thursday. And, the latest round of coronavirus testing shows no new positive tests among the players that are inside the Orlando bubble. Things are kind of looking up, Matt. When are you going to get to the Orlando bubble? Have we decided that yet?
I don't think we've decided that yet. I think it's still a wait and see. I definitely know that I'm not going to be in the bubble per se. I think that window is closed. There's about a dozen or 15 media folks, including Mark Medina of USA Today, who is affiliated with us. But in order to be there, the cost is gargantuan, and you have to decide like already. If you are an outlet that is there, at what point maybe you're going to swap one of your reporters for a different reporter so the same person isn't there for like 3 months. And that's already been decided. It's already been done. So unless something drastic changes, I'm not going to be in the bubble. But there could come a point where I would go down to Orlando and be outside the bubble, but then be able to go to games and see them in person. And we'll try to figure out how valuable that'll be as opposed to being at home, because if I do go to the bubble to watch the games, I still wouldn't be able to go to press conferences or have any face-to-face interaction with players or coaches. So I'd be doing, Zoom conference calls in Orlando, just like I'm doing at home. So so who knows what the value will be. Obviously, I'd love to be there if there's an opportunity for me to do so. But at the same time, I don't want to have this open-ended trip to Orlando where I'm just doing Zoom calls all the time. I'd like to probably wait until maybe we're closer to the NBA finals, and if the Bucks are still playing, then I think that's a valid conversation.
For a lot of reasons, the visual I have in my head of the Lopez brothers giving you their own personalized tour of the Disney World grounds, it's not going to happen, which is disappointing, but maybe someday, maybe when the world moves on, if it ever moves on, you can accompany them in Orlando or something and get the tour. But two people who are also not in the bubble right now for the Milwaukee Bucks are Eric Bledsoe and Pat Connaughton. We did learn you and ESPN reporting that Pat Connaughton, who we kind of didn't know his whereabouts for a while, which is kind of plays into what we were just talking about. There isn't any real level of access to these teams right now, so a week went by and nobody really realized, because there was no way to see, that Pat Connaughton wasn't with the Bucks. And turns out he did have a positive COVID-19 test. He and Eric Bledsoe now both are supposedly on their way back to full health. They largely asymptomatic, it sounds like, and feeling good, but not with the team, of course, until they pass through all these protocols. I want to talk about on the court what that means for the Bucks in the short term, but sort of, can you sort of give a sense of what awaits them? You know, what are the things they have to do to get back with the team? Because it's not as simple as just having a coronavirus test one day and showing negative. There's a little more to it. And then once they get there, are they able to just jump into gameplay? Like, what do they have to do? What hurdles do they have to clear before they can be back with the Bucks full time?
Yeah, they're going to have multiple tests showing that they're negative before they go anywhere. And then they're going to have to get to Orlando and quarantine again and have multiple positive tests again. So it's going to be a multi-day process for them to get there and get fully cleared. The league, obviously you mentioned, you know, they tested the 346 players who are in the bubble, and zero came back positive as of July 13th round of testing. So they don't want to introduce any players who have the virus, and they want to take every step possible. You know, you don't want any false negatives. You know, the more tests you do, the less chance of a false negative. So you're trying to really, you know, cross your T's and dot your I's when it comes to making sure guys who have tested positive are no longer testing positive. So it's going to be a little while. And you know, Bud said the other day that he and the team hope and expect that Bled is on the closer side of the spectrum than the longer in terms of, you know, when he could be coming back. And I think they feel the same about Pat Connaughton. I know Pat, you know, in his statement, you know, he said he's feeling healthy. He's feeling good. He's ready to kind of, you know, keep going. And he's dribbling his basketball all the time, and he's hanging out in his apartment. And, you know, he just wait until it's his time to get going. So, you know, the Bucks have been a deep team throughout the past couple seasons. Like, they know all about the whole next man up mentality, and they have guys who can step in. And obviously the health of Eric Bledsoe and Pat Connaughton and their families is of the utmost importance, and the sanctity of the bubble and all that. But I think, you know, it's positive that all the signs are pointing to everything being able to continue as normal. Though, you know, we still, you know, I think Bud addressed this recently too. Like, we don't know normal with coronavirus yet. We don't really know, you know, even if you are asymptomatic, if there are long-term effects that could happen to individuals, including, you know, high-level athletes. Just the long-term effects just aren't known yet. So as a team, their medical staff and their training staff, their coaching staff, they're all working very closely together to come up with a plan for guys, you know, like Bled and Pat. And, you know, to ensure that when they get back and they're starting to work back into basketball shape, as everyone is right now, that they're taking extra caution and paying closer attention to make sure that those guys are in the best place possible.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking, as you mentioned, the sort of trainers and stuff, they sort of take on an added medical role here, because like you said, we still don't really know a lot of the long-term effects, even for those who are asymptomatic. I think we all assume and hope that there will be no long-term effects for people who have no symptoms, but or at least very limited minor symptoms, but we don't know that. So they have this sort of added medical responsibility to kind of monitor and make sure that you know, this doesn't spiral or become a problem down the line. As far as on the court with Bledsoe and Connaughton, you know, we've talked about how the Bucks are in sort of an enviable position. They are going to get the one seed in the East with only 8 games left to determine playoff seeding. It would take an absolute meltdown, almost having to lose all 8 games to not be the number one seed in the East. So the Bucks can be very patient. They don't need to rush Bledsoe or Connaughton back. But in the event that they don't have these guys for a prolonged period of time, again, we don't, timeline speculation seems so silly right now because who knows with any of this, but where do you feel like the Bucks are going to be, you know, missing something? Obviously, Connaughton off the bench, Bledsoe is a key member of the starting lineup. They'll be missing defensive presence, guard presence. But where do you feel like the Bucks are situated where they could cover for those guys' absence, at least in the short term?
Oh, absolutely. I think in the past, what they've done, I mean, obviously George Hill would make sense in the starting lineup, you know, for Eric Bledsoe. He'll probably get more minutes. But I think in the past, they've had Dante DiVincenzo in the starting lineup a little bit more in those situations. So it'd be a starting lineup of DiVincenzo, Matthews, Middleton, Giannis, and Brooke Lopez. And that's worked fine. You know, I think there was a time earlier in the season where Bledsoe was out for a few games in a row. You know, and that's where Dante jumped in off the bench mob. And then George Hill still came in and played a decent amount of minutes, you know, as that, you know, backup point guard running the second unit, but also, you know, at times closing games. And Dante has been really good this season. You know, whether he's coming off the bench or he's starting, I think being healthy was huge for him. And he's obviously progressed, especially defensively, but I think getting his shot, you know, a little bit on track and getting to be able to play consistently has been really good. So I think he'll be okay. you know, and even if it has to extend, you know, through some of those regular season games and into the playoffs, I think it'll be fine. The Bucks have some wiggle room, not just with their seeding games, but whoever they play in the eighth seed is not going to be much of a challenge, or should not be much of a challenge. You know, given that the Wizards are without Bradley Beal and Davis Bertans and don't really have too many guys available. The Nets are just absolutely depleted, and are getting stood up by guys that they're signing and just have like nothing going. You know, and the Magic, you know, could be a little bit of a test, I guess. They're the 1-8 seed team that that is actually, you know, stuck together, but they could probably be the 7th seed because those other teams are just, you know, not good. So whatever happens, like, they have that first round series to kind of work through things too. And yeah, Pat, like, he played 61 out of 65 games before the stoppage. And so obviously he's been integral to their team, but, you know, that just means more minutes for a guy like Sterling Brown, more opportunities to go big and maybe play, Marvin Williams and Ersan Ilyasova, more, maybe not necessarily together, but you could play a lineup where, you could have like Marvin and Giannis and Brook Lopez, for example. Like, it's a really big lineup, but that's basically like Giannis at the three, and I don't know if that's good or better, but what better time to tinker and play with things than now? I just remember, you know, last season in Utah when they went with that crazy big starting lineup where like Middleton was the smallest guy. You know, why not try that again sometime just to see, like, okay, what is a lineup of, like, you know, Middleton, Giannis, it could be Marvin and Ersan, and like Brooke, like, what does that look like? What happens? Who knows? That's, you know, there might be some time for that. So yeah, I think the Bucks will be fine. As long as those guys are healthy and can get back to what they were doing and have no long-term effects, I think they'll be fine and being able to fill in. I think there could be times where we see a lot of like Frank Mason, you know, games like, you know, like normally at the end of the regular season, there are games where Bud would just sit all the starters, and just ride, you know, DJ Wilson and Frank Mason. I remember last year, Bonzi Colson had a few games, and, Tim Frazier played like 53 minutes in an overtime game. Like, we're going to see some of that too. Like, there's going to be times where Bud just empties the bench and says, like, hands the keys to like Sterling Brown and Frank Mason and Thanasis, and DJ Wilson, and just says, all right, like, go for it, guys, have fun. And those games could be very interesting.
No Cam Reynolds, though, as we found out on Monday, as the Bucks announced their roster, their official traveling roster. Cam Reynolds, one of the two-way players on the team, not invited down to Orlando. That's kind of a bummer if you're the last guy out, the one guy that's left home. That stinks, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not totally surprised by it, but it's still gotta hurt. Like, if you're Cam, like, he didn't play in any games for the Bucks this season. You know, he's on a two-way contract, so he spent most of his time with the Herd, and he was called up sometimes. Like, he was around the team. He did have opportunities to practice with them and be around for games, but he never had a chance to get in one. And when you're the Bucks, you have that 35-man traveling unit or 35-person traveling unit, and you have to decide who's in it. And like, the NBA had some rules, like, you have to have a senior level executive, so John Horst is there. You have to have, you know, a PR person, you have to have a social media person, like, and so that those are spots, right? And like, you can have up to 17 players. So if you have 17 players and the people I just named, like, that's 20 people, you got 15 left. And Bud has, you know, a lot of assistant coaches. I think it's like 7. And he uses them a lot. Like, they are an integral part of the way that they practice and the way that they break things down into individual work, you know, what they call vitamins. You know, so the assistant coaches are very important. So to figure out, you know, how many assistant coaches you can bring while also trying to bring as many medical staff and training staff people as possible, because those are the people who the Bucks see as being, you know, vital to the health and safety and well-being of their players. You need people to be able to stretch them out, work them out, monitor all of their workloads and things like that, things that not just anyone can do. So they had to make the tough decision to say, you know what, like, having, you know, alternate personnel, like non-player personnel, having one extra of those people as opposed to having a roster of 17, like that was more valuable to them. And I get it. Like if he's not going to play, there's someone else they can bring who can do a job that a player doesn't normally do, and who can, you know, service the top 16, or, you know, Bud mentioned on Monday that you can kind of really, how are you trying to make things the best for like the top like 8, 9, 10, 11 guys, right? Like those are the guys who are going to be playing the most in the playoffs, like, and you need to get, you know, support them the most. And, you know, right now they only have 14 guys available, and you need to protect, you know, your depth with some extra guys, obviously, and have guys who can play out the regular season games if you want to, like, you know, give those top guys a rest. So 16 was the right number for them. And I think it makes a lot of sense. It stinks for Cam. I'm sure he would have loved to be there. But I think for the Bucks overall, that was the wise choice.
We did find out a few days ago that that the voting for the postseason awards, the NBA postseason awards, would be pretty much completed before these 8 games get going. So essentially the regular season that is already complete is going to be the sample we're choosing the MVP, the Rookie of the Year, the Coach of the Year from. We've talked a lot about this, so we don't need to spend too much time on it. It does feel like there was maybe, again, a renewed push for LeBron James and his greatness on social media as a MVP candidate, but with news that the awards, that the sample size, I don't know what the terminology is. I'm drawing a blank here, but the stretch of time that we're going to be choosing from now is set in stone. You see like ESPN panel of experts, and the vast majority, like 17 of 20, are picking Giannis to win MVP. I think we can all assume that Giannis is going to win that award, to win the most valuable player for the second straight season now. I don't know about Defensive Player of the Year. I think that is still a strong possibility for Giannis. Rudy Gobert being, of course, the other obvious candidate for that one. I'm assuming you've already turned in your vote or will be turning in your vote very soon, but you don't expect anything to really change on the MVP front, do you?
I don't think anything's going to change. No, I haven't submitted my vote yet. I have not gotten the email from the league yet asking for my vote. I haven't gotten the official ballot. I have been in touch in the past with folks from the NBA who have asked, you know, hey, you know, you voted in the past. Would you like to vote again? Would you be willing to vote again? And I did say yes. And I take that very seriously. So whenever I do get the official ballot, I think they have to formulate it with, you know, they have an outside company and then they tabulate the votes and all that stuff. It's all very official. I will look at it with fresh eyes. I will do all the deep dives and the research, and I will try to do my best to do the fairest ballot I can and the most reasonable and sensible ballot I can. And I think I can say pretty confidently right now that in doing so, I will definitely have Giannis as the MVP, because I don't think there's really there's no statistical argument against it. I think you could make a narrative-based argument, you know, for LeBron and say, you know, everything that he's done and the context in which he's done it and the value of being in the West and playing against teams in the West and just kind of his historical greatness, and just be like, hey, like he's LeBron, he's amazing, he's great, he's better than everyone, regardless of what the stats say. I mean, you could do all that, but who had the best season this year? I think it's very clearly Giannis.
Yeah, I don't think there's any secret that's where we're headed. There will be some hand wringing after the awards are announced, and LeBron is only second. But like you know, like you said, this is still this is Giannis's moment, Giannis's time, and you know the Bucks are still you know, the best team in the NBA, so they should get some acknowledgement for that as well. I know that doesn't always play into the MVP discussion, but sort of unofficially, it also kind of does. You wrote about Chris Middleton on Monday. The Bucks sort of you know, they're number two in. Right behind Giannis, pretty much in terms of, well, I guess offense and defense, you could say. He's looking pretty good, according to Kyle Korver. And again, we don't really have eyes in the room where we can sort of judge that. It's pretty easy right now for players and coaches on Zoom interviews to say, oh yeah, he's in the best shape we've seen him, or he's playing out of his mind. But you've also written about how Chris Middleton says that he didn't get a chance to pick up a basketball for much of the quarantine for the first few months after things shut down. He was not, you know, he was not playing basketball anywhere. He was not handling a ball. He was just taking a complete break from it. and yet then you hear that he's coming back looking strong. That's certainly encouraging. I mean, Chris Middleton is already, I think, this season playing on another level than what we've seen before. He obviously an all-star level and a, you know, to the point where he could be third-team NBA, like we talked about on the last podcast. So when you hear players sort of sing his praises, do you have to take it with just the largest grain of salt because you can't see it for yourself? Or does it feel like, you know, maybe Chris Middleton's going to find yet another level here? Maybe not even necessarily this season, but going forward in his career.
I think you do need to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt because, you know, like, we can't see it. We can't confirm it. But, you know, the context of the question was that, you know, Korver had talked about how a lot of his teammates, he was impressed with how they came back and they were, you know, in shape and doing really well and looked really explosive and all this stuff. And so I followed up and I was like, well, you mentioned that a lot of guys are looking good. Like, who has impressed you the most? Like, who have you looked at and said, wow, like, I didn't know you could do that, or something like that. Just like, who stands out? And Kyle was like, oh, well, if, you know, off the top of my head, like, if someone stands out, it's Chris. Like, you know, if he had to pick somebody, it's Chris. And he offered that kind of like, you know, I just asked him for one person, but he could have said anybody. If there are multiple, he could have said anybody, but he did mention Chris specifically. And, you know, while we can't see him, you know, I can tell just by, you know, we talked to Chris on Monday night too. But in seeing him just via Zoom, he does look like a little bit slimmer, which is something that he said he tried to do. His arms look maybe a little bit more cut. You know, you can't see his legs in the Zoom videos. So I can't like really confirm that he's got like massive, like, you know, like legs or something like that. Like his workouts haven't like yielded like visible results in that way. But if he's looking more explosive, looking more dynamic on the court, I think that's a big positive for the Bucks. In the way that he's able to move and get around. And I think that if he can do that, plus continue to shoot the way he has, it could be a big positive. And I know that Chris on social media has often been derided for his comment about not touching a ball for 2 or 3 months. You know, but I think it bears mentioning that, you know, as I've said in the past, like Giannis said something fairly similar, you know, for at least a month after the quarantine started. And Korver, someone asked him yesterday or Monday if he had a hoop at his house or access to a hoop. And he was like, my neighbor has a hoop, but it's only a 7-foot hoop. So I did some dunking and that's about it. So it's not like Middleton was the only one of the Bucks who wasn't doing shooting stuff or ball work, you know, or at least isn't admitting to it, because as I've said before, like, they could have had secret sessions, but they don't want to incriminate themselves, right? And be like, oh, hey, I was breaking the rules. So, you know, I think that if Chris Middleton is looking as good as Kyle Korver said, and you know, obviously Mike Budenholzer confirmed it. I asked him about, you know, Kyle's comments a little bit later in the Zoom session. You know, if he's looking that much better, I think that can only be a good thing for the Bucks and their title chances.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's why there's this sort of modesty about it, because there probably were opportunities where they were able to play some pickup games with each other or with other people, and just don't want to, at a time when people were supposed to be social distancing, just don't want to sort of cop to that, I guess. But I do find it a little hard to believe that months would have gone by without NBA players picking up a basketball or getting near a hoop or something like that. They will get to hoop sort of for real here on Thursday when they scrimmage the San Antonio Spurs. The Bucks will have 3 scrimmages against teams that they won't be facing during the regular part of the season, the 8-game regular season that is to come. I kind of feel like those 8 games are also sort of glorified scrimmages too, because the Bucks are situated so well for the playoffs. I don't know how you necessarily would feel about that, but with this scrimmage, potentially, it sounds like we'll be streamed somewhere at Bucks.com, presumably, so that we should be able to watch it in some respects. Anything in particular you're looking for? I think when we hear, you know, shaking off the rust or trying to sort of get back together as a team, you're sort of picturing, you know, a few more front iron shots, a few more passes out of bounds, maybe a missed defensive rotation. That seems to be sort of the blunt force end of that, the obvious stuff. What are some of the things you're looking for as you want to evaluate, well, how connected are the Bucks in the time that they've had to get back?
You know, I want to see how Bud manages the minutes. He mentioned that he expects Giannis will play on Thursday. He was asked specifically about Giannis, and he did say he thinks he'll play. He doesn't know about the other two scrimmages, and whether he'll play limited minutes or not at all in some of those. But at least we should expect to see him on Thursday. You know, how does he handle these preseason games, these 40-minute scrimmages that they're going to have? How does he work through the lineup? Does he try and get all 16 guys into a single scrimmage, or does he treat it like a game and only have a rotation that goes 9, 10, 11 deep, you know, and try to work through it that way? And then once they're on the court, you know, in terms of looking at their chemistry, I mostly want to look at defense, because I feel like their offense, you know, it is free-flowing. It is, you know, open and spacious, and they kind of have an identity there. But that's the kind of stuff I feel like is a little bit more intuitive, and people know their spots, know where they're supposed to go. I want to see defensively, you know, how do they communicate, and how can they adjust to, you know, opposing teams and work together? Because it's something that you can't really practice when you're playing by yourself, or just shooting by yourself, or working by yourself. You need that team context to work on team defense. And they've only had that for about a week. So how do you get back into a defensive flow that quickly and kind of work on your timing in that short period of time? So I think defense will be really interesting to watch. Obviously, we'll keep an eye on offense and how guys are shooting. And obviously, you know, it's a small sample size. If a guy goes, you know, 8 for 8 from the floor, you're not going to be like, oh, he's incredible now. Like, he learned something or changed something. No, it's like he had a really good shooting night. And same thing, if a guy goes 0 for 10, it's not going to be like, oh, well, this person's terrible. They're rusty. They should have been shooting more during quarantine. Like,
oh, we will say those things. They'll be meaningless, but we will say them.
Yeah, yes, people will say them, and I will ignore them. Because, like, you know, a one-game sample size is a one-game sample size. You know, it's their first game inside the bubble where there won't be there won't be any fans. There'll be probably somewhere between, I would guess, like, you know, excluding coaches and players and team staff, there'll probably be somewhere between like 20 and 50 people there, maybe. Because there's only a limited number of media, and obviously there'll be people working, you know, TV cameras or whatever. I think the scrimmages at least will be on Bucks.com. The rest of the games will be on national TV and Fox Sports Wisconsin. And then other players could potentially go to games and watch them. So, like, there's a limited number of people who can go. But, you know, the NBA is working on visuals and some kind of setup for trying to make the arena seem less empty. I know Kyle Korver said he saw got a look at, like, what it's going to look like. And he was pretty impressed. It was different than he thought. But it's not going to feel like an empty arena, which is the goal. So, like, they're going to be adjusting to all of that all at the same time. So this game is kind of a novelty, and I think reading too much into it, it's just not a great idea. But it's great that we'll have it and be able to watch it and be able to read anything into it, because that means basketball's back.
Yeah, that July 31st date when the Bucks take on the Celtics is going to be an interesting day. I mean, the Brewers will have their quote unquote home opener that day. The baseball season getting underway Friday in Chicago for the Brewers. So a lot of Milwaukee sports that day, but also just a strange, bizarre, you know, feeling, because fans aren't going to be attending these games. And I am very curious, when you're talking about sort of the TV production end, what we're going to see. You know, we've already started to see with some of these baseball scrimmages the capabilities of miking up players, having in-game interviews, you know, sort of interactive elements. And I'm sure basketball has thought of that as well. It's maybe a little more limited because they are all in one central location, presumably using the technology available to them simply at Disney World, and not, you know, aren't able to go too much outside the box. But I'm really interested to see what these broadcasts look like. There's an opportunity to do some pretty different things, and you know, I'll be interested. I'll be interested to hear the audio, the on-court audio, you know, what the stuff that isn't bleeped out, for example, what that ends up sounding like, looking like. You kind of referred to briefly the other teams in the bubble, players opting out. Washington is a good example. The Brooklyn Nets are will look nothing like they looked like in the regular season, with the number of players that have elected not to come back. Spencer Dinwiddie and Wilson Chandler, in addition to guys like Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Michael Beasley is coming back from a positive COVID test. So there's just not a lot of Nets players that are going to be available. I have to think if the Bucks wind up facing the Nets or the Wizards in the eighth seed, right now it would be Orlando if the season were to just stop right now. You know, the Bucks are already probably going to coast past that first round opponent. But if there is an argument for that asterisk that has been debated over who wins this title, I think that's really the only, you know, leg you have to stand on. That first round opponent might be a team that just doesn't have its full complement of players. You know, maybe just really wants to get out of there at some point. I could see that being the case, you know, after the first few weeks of this. But I don't know how you feel about that. It is a little disappointing on that front that the Bucks are probably going to get a depleted opponent one way or another. Somewhere along the way, they're going to run into a team that doesn't have their full complement of players. And that particularly seems true in a 1-8 matchup with some teams that are really just, they're just not going to be full participants in this bubble.
I guess the argument against that would just be that unless the Nets had Kevin Durant, which they wouldn't have in the spring, none of those teams in the 7 or 8, especially the 18, none of those 18 teams would have a chance against the Bucks anyway.
Right, you're right.
I don't care if they're playing G League guys or they're playing the guys that they had. Like, it's just not happening. Like, the Bucks are better than them, and that's that. Yes, they'll probably be disinterested at that point. Like, you know, that would be a normal thing. But, you know, I think there's also some of that in the normal season, right? Like, a team gets the 8 seed or just, like, squeaks in, and they're kind of just, like, happy to be there. And maybe they steal a game somewhere. But, like, the series, at least the 1-8 series, generally tend not to be all that close, you know, especially as we saw last year where, like, the Pistons, they weren't that great. Like, they had Blake Griffin playing on, like, one leg, and that was about the extent of the Pistons, and it can only get them so far. So, you know, it is what it is. Obviously, the Nets have been just a crazy ride this whole year. Their coach is gone, and, you know, Kyrie is hurt, and KD's been hurt the whole year, and now they have a bunch of other guys who are hurt or tested positive for COVID. They've signed guys like Michael Beasley. They signed him. He got there. He tested positive. He left. Like, they needed a substitute for Bees. Like, you know, former Bucks great Michael Beasley. I feel like we can.
Bucks legend. How dare you?
Yeah, I think we can say that. People love Bees. They should. I certainly enjoyed having him around. In the offseason before my time covering the team all the time. But you know, the games that I was there, he was just a fun guy. You know, the Nets have just been a mess. And Bradley Beal, like, you know, if he has any, like, if he has a hangnail, he's an all-star level player. Like, why should he come down and jeopardize anything? You know, and that totally.
Yeah, I mean, Davis Bertans, too. I mean, we talked about him, but, like, he's going to be a free agent. There's no point for Davis Bertans to show up here.
Oh, absolutely. He's about to get the bag this summer. And why would he jeopardize that? Yeah, I think the Bucks will be fine when it comes to dealing with the first round of the playoffs. The fun really happens when we get to the second round. And at that point, you know, if you're in the second round of the playoffs, you're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. You've made it. Your family is, I think, able to come once you reach the second round of the playoffs. You get your family showing up. You kind of are done with that first part. Of everything, you believe you have a chance to win a title. There are only 8 teams left. Like, that's when the rubber hits the road. So I think, you know, the Bucks in particular are one of the teams that are starting to look to. I'm not that they would ever say this, but I'll say it for them that they kind of look to that as like, okay, like, it's go time.
Mm-hmm. You know, you just mentioned Kyrie. There was a moment where it felt like the bubble, the NBA bubble was maybe going to burst before everybody got there, when Kyrie was sort of advocating that players choose not to return to the season, that there was so much going on was in social justice movements around the country, the Black Lives Matter movement, that it was just time to, you know, maybe stop playing games and start really focusing on things like marching and you know, advocacy. And the Bucks obviously took part in a march here in Milwaukee, and I'm sure I know other players around the country were involved in very similar things. And that I guess concept sort of died down. I don't know how seriously that was taken by the players across the league. We do know that they'll be able to wear messages of social justice on their jerseys. I'm curious what you think of that. We know, like, Kyle Korver, for example, is going to wear, I believe, Black Lives Matter on the back of his jersey. DJ Wilson said he wanted to wear the name Breonna Taylor. She, a woman gunned down in Louisville by members of the police force there, and that's a massive controversy and sort of one of the major flashpoints in this Black Lives Matter movement. He was told that that wasn't an option, that they've been mutually agreed upon by the Players Association and the league. But I don't know, that rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. It feels like it's only a half gesture if the players can only say certain messages. You know, if it's sort of like, you know, yeah, you could say whatever you want, but choose from this list. It feels maybe a little bit inauthentic to me. On the other hand, I mean, I recognize the NBA has been pretty forward-thinking and really encouraged players to use their voice, so I'm not suggesting that they're being stifled here. It just, to me, it felt like it was half in, and I don't know. How did you react to that when you listened to players talk about that?
Yeah, well, one, I think players are definitely using their platform and are intent on using their platform and are very passionate about the movements and the things that they stand for, and especially the fight for social justice. You know, I think that, you know, you mentioned Kyrie. I think that was a good and valid thing for him to kind of spearhead and bring up. Yeah, I think that conversation has merit and is worth discussing. And if you are part of the Players Association, I think at the end of the day, you appreciate that conversation was had. You know, obviously they came to the decision that, yes, like, we're going to play. But it is good and valid for someone to step in and say, hey, like, should we even be playing, you know, with everything that's going on? Should we use our time and our energy and our focus somewhere else, something bigger than basketball? And then you can have that conversation. You can discuss it, and guys can make the different points they would make. And some people, you know, obviously said, hey, like, I think I can make the most impact by going to Orlando, by being visible, by having a camera, a microphone in my face, being able to say what I want to say and when I want to say it to a wider audience. And being able to go and wear a message on the back of my jersey and collect game checks that I can then donate and use to further things that I care about. So I think we've seen a lot of players doing things like that and making those choices. When it comes to the messages on the back of players' jerseys, like you mentioned, Kyle Korver, Chris Middleton will also wear Black Lives Matter on the back of his jersey. Giannis Antetokounmpo said he and Thanasis will wear Equality on their jersey. I know that a lot of players will be doing something similar. Jimmy Butler wants to have no name on the back of his jersey, but the NBA won't let him do that. You have to have something. So we'll see how that whole thing plays out. I do think there are certainly some inherent issues with the NBA's way of handling the messages on the back of the jerseys. Obviously, they've had to turn this around in a very short period of time and kind of come to some decisions, and they want to make sure players feel like they can be, you know, activists, or they feel like they can represent the causes that matter to them. But obviously the list is only a short list. Like, there are only a certain number of words you can choose. This isn't like the XFL back in the day where anybody could write anything on the back of their jersey. The league is, you know, very, very focused on only sending a specific message or allowing certain messaging on those jerseys. And there have been obviously some areas of the Twitterverse or the world where people are like, hey, well, why can't they say this? Or why can't they say that? Why can't you have this message or that? So, like, there's always going to be issues when you only allow certain things. And those can be perfectly valid as arguments. You could have someone who's like, hey, like, you know, why can't the players have a message about beating cancer or beating coronavirus or whatever? Like, why can't they have something like that that, you know, I think most people would agree on is good, like, but it doesn't fit into that messaging, which I'm sure, you know, will create some room for division. But I do think this is still overall probably still a good thing for the NBA. I think allowing players to have a little bit more freedom with what they put on their jerseys and the messaging that they send. I think players like that, and obviously it's a player-driven league. Having Black Lives Matter on the court, I think is something that again, the players I think they would all agree with and are okay with or are happy to play on a court that says that. And while it may turn off some fans, I think they're totally okay with losing those fans when it comes to you know, their focus and their interests. And I still think that the NBA's ratings and their viewership is going to be really good. I would expect so. I mean, with the limited number of sports that we've had for a long time and now having, you know, an abundance of games, I think almost all of them, I think maybe all of them are going to be on national TV. You're going to have just like a couple weeks of like game on game on game, like throughout the day. And I think, you know, that will overall be a good thing for the league. But, you know, there's always still things to talk about and things to debate about and discussions to have when it comes to the intersection of sports and social issues. And, you know, sometimes those conversations can be constructive. So hopefully the NBA is fostering maybe some constructive conversations and this could all be a good thing in the end.
On a much lighter note, before I let you go, Matt Velasquez, the real question I have is, have you ordered a new pair of Zoom Freak 2s? Those are out. The Greek Freak Zoom... What are we calling these? The Greek Freak Zoom Freak 2s? What's the official terminology?
I think they're just the Zoom Freak 2s.
I think you're right.
No, I do not have any. You know, it's tough because I cover Giannis, right? Like, and I recently... maybe like a year ago, needed to get some new basketball shoes, and the Freak ones were out. Maybe it's this winter. Might have been this winter. Who knows? Whenever I got these shoes, it's been so long. Time is weird, especially, you know, in a pandemic. But I recently went to go get shoes to play basketball in because I enjoy hooping, as it were. And I go to the mall, and I'm looking around the shoe store. And there is a person who works at the shoe store, and she is like, you know, asking me what I'm looking for. And, you know, I tend to like high tops a little bit more because I like the ankle support, and, you know, I'm looking at some different options, and she grabs some Freak ones, and she's like, oh, well, you know, what about these? What do you think about these? Like, you want to try these on? And I was like, no, I'm good. And then she gets a different colorway of those like a little while later and comes back. She's like, hey, like, you know, these are like, you know, these are good shoes. Like, you know, you want to check these out? And I was like, nah, I'm good. And then I'm still thinking between a few different ones. And she like grabs another colorway of Freaks. And she's like, what about these? Like, you know, like, are you sure? Like, you don't even want to try them on? Like, I'm like, all right, listen. I work for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I cover the Bucks. I just feel like I shouldn't wear Giannis' shoe while I'm doing this job. It just doesn't feel right to me. It feels like a conflict of interest. Like, I just can't do it. And then she was very confused. and I just like, okay, I found the ones I liked. I got some LeBron Witness 4s. I think that's what they're called. And I was like, okay, you know what? I feel fine with this. LeBrons have been around for a long time. I like the feel of the shoe. It's whatever. And I don't cover him on a daily basis. Like, I don't feel like this looks untoward. Yeah, I don't necessarily play basketball with anybody who is affiliated with the Bucks or around the Bucks or anything like that. But just like having Freak ones, just I don't know. Maybe at a later time, if I'm not covering the Bucks, would I get some of Giannis' shoes? They look like nice shoes. I like the Freak ones and the Freak twos. Like, it's a good pair of shoes that I'm sure you can play great basketball in. I've seen people play great basketball in them. Maybe I could be like that someday. Who knows? But the Freak 2's coming out. Obviously, I mean, that's a big thing for him, being able to continue his shoe line and put, you know, obviously he has a lot of family touches on them with his, you know, his brother's names and his parents' names on the bottom of the shoe, you know, different interesting colorways. Yeah, so I mean, that's obviously a big thing for him, and I'm sure people who are fans of the Bucks and even people who aren't fans of the Bucks are going to go out there and going to go grab those shoes.
I'm an old man, and I don't like change, and I just ordered, I believe, the fourth iteration of the very same pair of Skechers, just a different color each time. So I'm looking forward to their arrival and those comfy shoes that I know and love and trust because I've worn them for years now arrive in the mail. But
yeah, my wife would make fun of me because I would go to the shoe store and look for the shoe that I had.
Yeah, I mean, I do that too.
I mean, it's when you got a thing that you know you like and you know it fits well, like, why are you going to change it? Like, just go get a different one. But I get it. And I used to really enjoy, back in my college days, I used to pick up Starberries. Remember Starberries?
Yes. Wow.
I was like, hey, you know what? If I'm going to destroy a pair of shoes, I might as well destroy a $10 pair of shoes. And that
Bucks legend, Stephon Marbury.
Yes.
For 5 minutes.
And I figured three or four pairs of Starberries would last about as long as one pair of like $40 shoes. And $40 shoes aren't very good shoes. So, you know, but that's like what I could afford in college. So it's like, why don't I just like get two pairs of Starberries at a time. And as I destroy them, I can just keep going through. And like, it's a very like, you know, not a very good thing, I'm sure, for the environment. Like I as a consumer, I don't need to be buying like things that are just going to be thrown away. And like I recognize that I was expanding my carbon footprint and making bad choices as a whole. But $10 is $10, and those shoes worked. You definitely got the $10 out of them.
Yeah, my $40 shoes work fine because all I do is use them and mow the lawn and drive my car. So you're not seeing me on the hard courts of America. That's for sure. That's a big no for this guy. Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Milwaukee Bucks. Any last thoughts, Matt, before we sign off and get prepared to watch some actual, you know, at least with these scrimmages, some actual Bucks basketball?
Yes, finally, basketball is back and I'm excited for it and I'm here for it. And let's get it rolling.
Keep an eye out at jsonline.com, first of all, for anything Matt Velasquez is writing. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, the day they were recording here, you should definitely check out our flash sale at the Journal Sentinel. There's a pretty exciting offer. For $40, you can get a year's worth of Journal Sentinel access that's online for all of our premium stories. Matt has a ton of premium stories over the course of the year. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the world. You absolutely want to be up to date on that. And also, keep an eye out for how we're going to be covering this Bucks season. And it's going to be a little different. We're going to have some cool stuff planned. Not sure exactly what we're going to do yet, but that will also be something to keep an eye out on the site as well as on Twitter, where I'm sure we'll be promoting this. You can find me at JR Radcliffe and Matt_Velasquez as well. Find this podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. You know what to do. Please leave us a rating and review. Tell us that you love us as we hopefully will have a new podcast now every week going forward, getting us through what is hopefully a lengthy resumption of the NBA season. Thank you, Matt, for joining us. We will chat with you next week, and see you guys soon. Take care.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.